Welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. Today is April 26, 2026. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Bill Cundiff has been on a rant today. Just a fair warning to people who might be new to the program. Bill is normally, you know...
I love it.
Very measured.
You make me a Class 2 violator, I'm going to get vocal.
That's true, and I confessed I was sleeping with a Class 2 violator. This was a full disclosure show, by the way.
Yeah.
We don't like to keep anything hidden. So, Stan Ellis is our guest today. And some of the things we have not gotten into. Stan, what is a quantum physics lab? Can you break that down for just regular people? What does that do?
I'm glad you asked, because I wanted your listeners to hear a little bit about what's coming.
Nice.
Quantum computers, and there are several types. There's atom-based, there's ion-trapped, there's different functionalities, but they're a billion, think about this for a second, they're a billion times a billion times faster than your classic computer. For example, Harvard Medical University has already written all of the algorithms for protein folding in your DNA, which is cancer. And our classic computer cannot function, it doesn't have the functionality to solve those algorithms. In just another year or two, these quantum computers are coming up to speed fast, and like 10,000 qubits is their functionality, and they're going to be able to solve those algorithms, and they're going to be able to design specific medications for each individual protein folding. That means if you have brain cancer, it's one medicine. If you have lung cancer, it's another medicine. If you have leukemia, it's another medicine. So the functionality of these computers are beyond this world. And then I will tell you, people think AI is pretty wild now. Wait till the quantum computer gets hold of AI. Because, you know, AI is data simulation and accumulation and the simulation, and you wait till the quantum computer gets a hold of it. Anyway, that's what a quantum computer does. What my company did, and if I get a little long winded, let me know.
Oh no, today was your day to do that.
Well, my company took and was the encryption system and tied these computers together. It was the network. So when you see quantum networking. And it also was able to, we built these transceivers, and we took photonics, photons. Photons are light particles. There's a billion of them in your hand. We would split a photon, and we learned to message these photons. So if you split a photon, they become identical twins in nature. And if you touch one, the other one feels the identical same feeling, whether you're a foot apart or 10,000 miles.
Wow.
What? So what we would do is we built these transceivers. One transceiver would hold the message from these entangled photons, and the other one would go down a fiber optic line. And if somebody tried to hack us, this one that was right next to us felt the same identical feeling and would shut down the message. So we were 1,000% hack-proof. We were working for the Department of Defense, Department of Energy. We had projects all over the U.S. So in kind of a nutshell, that's what our quantum world was. And then the advance, you know, the advancement is like our satellites are traveling in nanoseconds, our signal is billionths of a second. We were able to come up with some software that got us to a trillionth of a second. So, I mean, this quantum world, and it's ever advancing, it's unbelievable. And I hope I gave you kind of an overview of what quantum was.
Well, so where would people's, where would this be impacting someone now? Or is this all still sort of behind the scenes development? phase?
Well, the encryption packages are so expensive that only the government can afford them. And it's still, you know, they have a long ways to go before they'll get down to where we can just buy them. But right now it's in the Department of Defense and Department of Energy and the big boys in the government.
Mm-hmm. And does this keep...
But there are several quantum computer companies that are public and doing very well, by the way.
Oh. Like yours?
Well, I sold my company right out a year ago because I had an opportunity, and I like opportunities.
Good for you. Well, you know, smart people should do well because that's always an incentive for other smart people to go do well, and then we don't wind up in idiocracy.
Stan, earlier,
yeah, I fear that more than anything.
Earlier, you had mentioned fusion energy. I was reading an article here a while back about fusion energy and the possibilities that that will bring. How far away are we from like commercial fusion? I know they just cracked the code where they were able to produce more energy than it took to create, which was the big nut to crack with fusion. It always took more energy than it produced. How far away are we from seeing fusion as a viable option to what we have now?
I think I don't know, I couldn't answer that accurately, but kind of like what's going on in the quantum world that will enhance fusion, I'd say we're 3 to 10 years away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that...
Before we get something where you put out more energy than you put in.
Right. Yeah, because that I after reading this article, it just sounded to me like that's the way we need to go. I mean, it's
what I've been promoting.
Yeah.
Well, remember,
I'm an oil and gas guy.
Well, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, when he was alive, he came on with us quite a bit, and we used to talk. Obviously, his thing was the grid. And he said, you know, there is no reason we can't have a power plant for each city. I mean, we can stop this, you know, contagion that would take place in, you know, when we black out the world for all of our electric cars.
Well, that's where data centers are going right now. Some of them are actually getting micronuclear to run their data plants because data centers take so much energy. They're using micronuclear to actually power them.
And
but not in California.
Oh.
Of course not.
Of course not, because, we can't be blinded by science here. We're just blinded. Wow. Well, and so at what point do they have to join the rest of the world? Do you have any, now that you've been on the outside, the inside, and, you know, all of that, what do you see?
Well, there was something last week in one of the committees that came through that everybody approved, and it was unanimous by both sides that they take another look at this nuclear, and I can't remember the bill, but it actually was pro-nuclear, because I think that everybody's starting to realize they're getting behind of everyone else.
Yeah. They've walled us off from the future, and at some point we become
Well, we
can't compete.
We have nuclear powered like aircraft carriers and submarines.
And they
can basically run forever on the fuel they have on board. Why couldn't we implement programs like that for towns, you know, have a little like a small nuclear reactor?
That's what he's saying, like micronuclear?
Yeah, micronuclear. I mean, if they can do it for a ship, I would imagine they could do it for a small town or a city to have their own source.
You're spot on. Of course they can. It's just a matter of the environmentalists getting out of the way.
Right.
Yeah, just so you know, there's a little bit of waste, okay, and every depending on how you're using it, every 2 or 3 years. Don't hold me to this one. But you do have a little bit of waste. But if it's stored properly, and I have a feeling with all of the technology that they're going to be able to regenerate that here in the next 3 years.
But again,
that's what everybody told them. Oh, my God, we're going to have a little waste. Well, you just powered millions of homes, and it cost you nothing, and you're complaining about a couple of barrels of waste to get your break.
Yeah. And that's why I thought this fusion thing was so fascinating, because it doesn't produce waste. You can turn it on and turn it off with the flip of a switch, and you don't have to have these huge shutdown modes and meltdowns and all this. You could put it in a container size box and run your whole town on it, and not have any nuclear waste.
That's why I promote fusion. I love fusion. I think it's the future.
Yeah, I think it is too.
Well, when you were or maybe you still are minimizing waste from oil refineries, like is in your bio, do you still do that, or was this a?
I sold that to a company that still does that.
What is that? What does that do? I mean, how do you do that? What is that?
Well, so what happened was, When oil fields produce oil and they ship it in the pipeline, when you produce oil, it comes up a little bitty solid and water in it, okay, from the formation. That's bad for the refinery. So they're held to a limit of 3% by volume. When it gets to the refinery, they have to knock out the rest of it through what are called desalters, and it settles out in tanks. So you have this sludge throughout the refinery. For example, one of the refineries was taking 200,000 barrels a day at 3% BS&W, which is basic sediment and water. That's 6,000 barrels every day of water and solids that they have to get rid of.
That's a lot.
So what we did, I had these massive centrifuges that were built on, they were portable units. And a centrifuge, what is it called, a decanter, three-phase centrifuge, and you pump this fluid with a little bit of chemical treatment through this centrifuge as it spun, and it separated the solids from the oil and the water, and it cleaned up the water, cleaned up the oil, so they could rerun the oil back to the refinery, and then it took the solid, and we dried them and reslurried them and made them into refinery coke. So we made zero waste out of something that they used to tell to disposal every day.
Wow.
So we actually, I was in every refinery at one time. I worked in every refinery in the state of California. I actually developed that technology. And then, like a dummy, I didn't patent it because I didn't know enough then. But anyway, a company came along and bought me out, and life's good.
Wow.
But so, they still do that.
So just out of curiosity, because I always wonder this whenever I see somebody invented something, I always want to know, what were you doing when you thought of it?
Solving a problem. You should see what I did for COVID. When COVID hit, I kept thinking, there has to be a way to mutate this virus. In other words, keep it from reproducing. And I found out that there were these little LEDs that are 240, 260 nanometer wavelength. So I put them in this apparatus, like in a backpack, put a battery with it. And when you breathe through it, it mutates the DNA and RNA of any virus, not just COVID. So you can grab a little mask that hooks onto this little apparatus. It's actually went into the FDA submission this last week. It's taken me this long to get through all of the testing and all the protocols, but I've seen a problem, and guess what? I fixed it. So now, if you walk into a hospital and 500 people are coughing and hacking in the emergency room, you just put this thing on and you won't get sick. Or if you have a high-risk person or a patient, and you're worried about them being around somebody getting sick, they just put this on, and you won't get sick.
Yeah, like they have to go in for surgery, but they don't want to bring them into the hospital because there's so many germs and whatnot.
Yeah. Yep, that's exactly right.
Holy cow, that's pretty fun.
Yeah, good stuff. And then I even made it so if you were sick, you could reverse the flow, and it would irradiate your exhaust, so you wouldn't get anybody else sick.
Irradiate your exhaust.
I have three patents on that now.
That's pretty cool. So, have they tried to cut you off at the knees with that?
Not yet.
Because I'm like, wow, you know what? We got that vaccine. You know, it's pretty great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we make a lot of money with that vaccine. This thing's going to blow that all up.
Yeah, my sister-in-law got the vaccine, had a stroke, and because Bristol Myers Squibb, her employer, forced her to get it. So she didn't want to do it, but had to keep her job because my brother was dying of dementia at the time. So, you know, really good stuff all the way around. And she just had a double bypass the other day. She's 58. So, obviously that...
I'm an anti-vaxxer.
Yeah.
I did not believe in it at all.
Well, I stopped getting, like, the flu. I did the flu shot 2 years in a row years ago. And both years I got the flu. I never get the flu. And I was sick both years. Never got it since. And I don't get the flu. Hadn't had pneumonia in, like, 10 years. Got the pneumonia shot. Had pneumonia that year. Again. Didn't do it again. And for the last 15 years, no pneumonia, right?
Vitamin C, D, and zinc. That's all you need.
There you go. Oh, my gosh. Yep. Interesting. See, I knew we were all kindred spirits marching down the same trail, along with all the other people out there. That, and they're always told that they're wrong and that they're anti-science and all that. So, Stan, we're going to stand on your shoulders and live happily ever after. I don't have a song for that, but we will be right back with our guest, Stan Ellis. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I've done the math, calibrated the imperfections. I got my slide rule from school. You add it up, and it don't add up. You shed some light on it too. And I'm just inches close to the finish. Cross it and bid you adieu. I calculated every combination, every misdirection, every subtle deception. Kickstart my thinking, I was lost in space, staring at a spot on the moon. Negotiating the anticipation of re-entering the atmosphere too soon.
Dan, we like it that you're blinding us with science. Actually, I feel like we're all getting an IQ bump today. Kind of nice. So much just nonsense out there in the world, and I don't know. I'm all nonsensed out, actually. So, what have we not chatted about that we should touch upon?
Well, I think we, between Mike Ariza and my shout out to them guys and Professor Meesh, because I wouldn't be talking to you if it had not been for them guys. This oil and gas thing is nonsense, driven by green agenda. And I wish I knew a way to stop it. And I think the only way we're going to stop it is if we get. I was asked this question the other day, how do we fix it? We're going to have to get some red folks in, and we got to get some Republicans voted in, because the Democrats live by this agenda. It's a greenhouse gas agenda, and that's all they care about. And they're starting to feel a little pressure economically, but it's not enough to say, okay, stop, make the right decision economically for our state. They just won't do it. So, until we get Republicans in office and get away from this super minority, the legislature, not much is going to happen. And I'm afraid that when we do have these gas lines, well, they're already blaming me everything on Trump.
Yeah.
Okay? So no matter what you do, I hear it on the floor all the time. Oh, Trump did this, and Trump's fault we have an affordability crisis, and it's Trump's fault we don't have any gas, and it's Trump's fault. because they don't want to accept any responsibility.
Well, you're right. I mean, as long as we have a one-party state, I think we're just going to continue down this same road, and I don't know how bad it's got to get. I just read the other day that California, I think it said it was the top state for people leaving the state.
It has been for a while.
Yeah, for...
I mean, the jokes about the...
various reasons, but so much of it is this green agenda. It's just putting people out of business.
Which leads to affordability.
Right.
It costs the lower emissions. It costs everywhere you turn around. It costs to meet their agenda. And that's why people are leaving. Look at construction materials. Look at, you know, they want to pass bills all the time on construction materials and how they need to be greener and meet certain standards. And to me, wood is wood. What's wrong with wood?
Yeah, right.
But anyway, they want to meet this greenhouse agenda. And it's costing, and look at the cost of homes. Look at the cost of automobiles. Look at the cost of every single thing. I do not know how a person making $100,000 a year can even live today in California.
Not in California. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I've said the same thing for years. That, you know, you take young folks that are just getting into the work market, and... first of all, you've got to have two incomes to even stand a chance, and the cost of housing and food and everything else, you've got to make a tremendous amount of money, or you're never going to own a home. Not in California. It's crazy.
But you know, we always say that you're not going to be able to own a home. But honestly, rent is more than most mortgages these days.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even here. So it used to be you rented until you could save up enough or whatever. But
that's the kicker. You can't save money in California, because you have to come up with huge down payments to buy a house. And then, yeah, maybe you could get into something and have a smaller payment than a rent payment. But... the down payments are what the killers are. I mean, you've got to have $40,000-$50,000 to plop down to qualify, and young people don't have that. You know,
is that ever as the affordability discussion comes up in the legislature? Is that ever part of the calculation?
It's always every day. It's affordability every single day.
Hmm.
But they won't do anything to fix it. They talk about it. They won't do anything to fix it.
Hmm.
You know, $12 billion for Medicare for illegals. I keep them the high-speed rail, billions.
Yeah.
It's just unconscionable to me, the lack of common sense in our legislature. It's just unbelievable. When we could do a few simple things and turn the state around, but nobody will listen.
Yeah, that's the crazy part is we wouldn't have to do that much, and things would start to turn pretty fast. But they don't want to do it.
It's
I hope we get a Republican governor.
Yeah. Well, people have the ability to make that happen. I mean, you know, it's funny because we, you know, you hear always, you know, people are like, oh, those people in office, blah blah blah. But they're not electing each other or themselves. Like, people are sending them there. It's our fellow citizens that are causing this problem.
That's right.
And we're going to have to get clear about. Yeah, I hear of a lot of people who are going to leave. You're not from California. I'm not from California. Bill is. Bill's from here. We can blame Bill.
Bill.
Yeah.
It's Bill.
Yeah, I'm from here.
Bill's from here.
I don't know for how much longer.
Yeah. But California is fast becoming the place you want to be from, right? People aren't flocking in because they can't make it happen.
Well, that farm in South Dakota is looking better and better every day, you guys.
Honestly, I wouldn't argue with you. A good friend of ours moved to the Black Hills, and they love it there. They've been there, I don't know, 10 years or maybe a little bit more. And life is just simpler. Our former sheriff moved to Idaho. I get Well, jokes mostly. We've always been on the joke parade, but you know, we trade information all the time, and it's like, God, it's just so much simpler here. And at some point, we're going to have to get serious with a Republican governor. What do you see? Like,
I at least see veto power. I see, you know, if he can get rid of some of these executive orders on CARB and cap and trade, and I could see some real difference real fast. But until we get a Republican governor, that's not going to happen. But I'm excited. I think that we have a good chance. We've got two great candidates, and I think that there's an opportunity there.
Yeah, and as far as the executive orders go, they say, well, you know, an executive order is just going to get turned back the minute you get another Democrat. But you know what? I think if we put some executive orders out there and they show a dramatic change in the direction of California, I think they'd have a hard time turning that back. I think they'd have to look at that. Yeah, I think they'd have to. They'd have to keep doing what they're doing to make people stay.
Yeah. Well, and what are you hearing from Nevada? What are we, 88% of the fuel in Nevada? Or something?
Yeah, something like that. And I heard that their governor is getting pretty vocal about what's going on with our situation here. So we'll see what happens. I know he's reached out to the California Energy Commission as well. I don't know if he's had any conversations with our governor, but he's pretty worried.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine. And Arizona, too. Is it specifically Phoenix, or is it all of Arizona?
I don't know that fact. I think that I wish Mitch was on here.
I think they said Phoenix for whatever reason, and so maybe it's just Phoenix?
It's about 40%. About 40% of Arizona supply is from us.
Yeah. And so I would imagine they're kind of sweating bullets, too, as we're not solving this problem.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So,
yeah,
I was going to say, like, on the shortage end of it, when the shortage begins, this will be different than it was, like, in the 70s. This will be a different type of shortage because there's a different level of production. Is that correct, or...?
You know, shortage is a shortage, and I don't.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. I mean, I would say, you know, it's looking like May, last week of May now, or third and fourth week of May. But I can't be for sure. Again, it's still to resolve that. It's going to take a few ships immediately to be coming in from the Gulf Coast because it's going to take a couple weeks. So the minute we feel it, we could feel some reprieve in 2 to 3 weeks, but they could be rationing, yeah. I mean, it could come in a few short weeks.
Yeah, because the ships coming from, Asia, or, you know, whether they're Russian ships or Chinese ships or whatever.
That's 6 weeks, yeah.
That's a long way off.
Yep, yep. So our resolve is to just go right to the Gulf Coast.
Wow. Yeah, not good, and all self-imposed. So if we were still processing oil and refining gas here, the whole Iran crisis would have skipped us entirely.
Entirely. Absolutely, Aaron. 100% entirely. Iran has nothing to do, very little to do with what we have here, except maybe shortage of ships now.
Yeah, not because we're getting so much from overseas, but we didn't have to.
Yep, that's right. Exactly right.
So,
Greenhouse Gas, hey, Sierra Club, and Center for Biodiversity, thank you guys very much.
Yeah, and the benefit of that is really nothing. I think the first show we did with you guys, what did they say, that all of this regulatory thing, we're already like 99% emission, you know, free or whatever, and it's, or 98, and it's like 1% or something. It's some minuscule amount.
It costs X to get clean air, and then it costs 10X to get super clean air. So folks, you need to get real with your, you know, you talk about affordability, then you turn around and you put regulation in place that make it not affordable. It's so hypocritical.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But, you know, I'm noticing that a lot of it, and since you're, you know, in the land of inventing and math and science and those things should all be based on fact. I mean,
thank you.
That, right? Like, make facts great again.
Thank
right?
you. not conjecture, not what if.
Yeah.
Let's base it on scientific facts. And
yeah.
Guess what? Nobody cares. They all get up there and pander and tell everybody, oh, we've got asthma attacks. Well, guess what? Where do you think asthma has 100 different sources, people? Is it from VOCs, from gas? Get real. You're so right. Now you got me all fired up again.
Pull the cord. Well, because the thing that it reminds me of, we interviewed this guy. He was a scientist out of UCLA. He was a professor, and for the life of me, I can't think of his name. And it was about the climate, you know, hoax and all this stuff. But in the course of that interview, he told us, he goes, well, I was the guy who postulated that secondhand smoke causes cancer. We were like, oh, I mean, okay. He goes, so do you think it causes cancer? We're like, well, yeah. He said, yeah, I proved it doesn't. Did you ever hear that?
Yeah, no kidding.
No.
Wow.
Yeah, so apparently it doesn't. He goes, yeah, lung irritation, you know, all sorts of things like that, but it doesn't actually cause cancer, and nobody would produce my results because it flew in the face of their, like, orthodoxy.
Oh, my gosh.
I know, right? Did you know
there
that?
You go. There.
Like, did you know it doesn't cause cancer?
I had no idea.
Yeah. No, we didn't either.
I'm like, no idea.
Poor guy. Nobody heard anything about it, and they were in the process. I think they kind of did. I don't know what eventually happened with that. It's been a few years, but they drummed him out because he refused to knuckle under to the climate hoax. He's like, wait, you know, CO2 is good for plants. They were like, oh, heretic, get out.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, your whole cigarette smoke thing, you screwed us on that too. Get out twice.
You're nothing but trouble.
You're a problem, you fact guy. Yeah, I cannot, for the life of me, I don't think I'll ever understand that, how science became the stuff of opinion, right? Like, you can't have multiple facts and that it's settled. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the settled part. I'm like, Yeah.
Yeah.
Science was settled. We wouldn't have invented the wheel, right?
Politics supersedes science.
Mm-hmm. We have to take a really swift break. We're going to come back with our guest, Stan Ellison. We're going to ramp for probably another, you know, maybe 15 minutes up to the top of the hour, I'm thinking. Oh, I can't do it because I forgot to push send on the music. And that's why Alex was in there having a seizure. He's not having a seizure. He was having a crisis of mind reading. Sorry, Alex.
He taking some secondhand smoke.
Yeah, he was still having fits about secondhand smoke. Oh, man. Okay, now we're going to be right back. No one's having a seizure. Secondhand smoke doesn't cause cancer, and more mind-blowing facts will be forthcoming. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Compliance. We just need your compliance. You will feel no pain anymore. No more defiance. We just need your compliance. Just give us your compliance. We won't let you feel lost anymore. No more self-reliance. Still you wonder who's cheating who, and who's being true. Who don't even care anymore. It makes you wonder who's doing right with someone tonight. Whose car's parked next door.
Yeah, that's the guy that was at Bill's shop. His car's parked next door.
Cheating who?
Yeah, exactly. That is the $64,000 question, right? Who's cheating who? And Mike shot us a text. The pipeline feeds Tucson from El Paso, but Phoenix comes from us. So we were right. Yeah, that's why we keep saying Phoenix. It's not Arizona. It's Phoenix.
Yep, sure enough.
And that's funny. He also says, I didn't know that Stan literally invented two of the processes that I used at Valero's coker and crude unit. You guys should talk more.
Yeah, we were talking about that last night. It was pretty funny.
That is pretty funny. He's been in the refinery side, but again, you know, nobody is 100% part of the entire process, right? Everybody's got kind of their lane.
Well, they're so sophisticated that you have so many different types of process units, and they all become experts kind of in their own little area, and that's just has the way it has to be.
Sure, and that makes sense. So, what kind of stuff are you working on now?
Well, funny you should ask. I'm still solving problems.
Of course.
You'll get a kick out of this one. Your listeners might. About several years ago, I bought this ranch and I wanted to plant pistachios. And it was loaded with tumbleweeds. So I bunch up my tumbleweeds and I go down to get a burn permit. Aha, airborne. And they say, well, you can't burn right now because the air quality. Okay. So I went home and I got those tumbleweeds and took them to the lab and found out the reason livestock won't eat a tumbleweed is because it's bitter to the taste and upsets the stomach. And it was loaded with these four organic acids. And I went, holy cow, this one primary organic acid was oxalic. So I went out and bought a baler and a grinder and a reactor and a filter press, and I made an organic pesticide out of tumbleweed that was killing bee mites. There was a parasite on a honeybee.
Hmm.
So then I went to the FDA to get an organic pesticide. I patented it, by the way. Went to get an organic pesticide license and said, oh, it's going to be 12 years.
That's what I mean. The bureaucracy. Yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah. And then I'll come back to Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, they were trying to pass a bill that got rid of, 23 pesticides that had PFAS in them. Well, it wasn't the PFAS making the pesticides bioaccumulative. It was the pesticide portion, and it takes 14 years to get it approved through the EPA. So what are you going to do, or FDA? So what are you going to do, get rid of all your pesticides and then not have anything? So anyway, ludicrous.
It is ludicrous, and that's what they did up on the Klamath. I've worked on that for a long time, and up there, they wouldn't, when you spray grasshoppers, you have to spray them before they fly, because once they can fly, then the spray doesn't work, right? So they wouldn't okay the use of the pesticide in time, and so they had 3 years of massive grasshopper infestation. I swear.
Yep.
I mean, I wasn't alive when Moses was a boy, but I got to tell you, I think it looked a lot like that. I was driving around with a guy through his, actually, we weren't even in his fields. We were near them, and it looked like the snowstorms where I grew up in Connecticut. It was like a blizzard of yellow. I've never seen that many bugs of any kind in my entire life. We drove by this field, and he goes, hey, see that field right there? I'm like, yeah. He goes, yeah, that's my flood-irrigated field. Hello. It looked like the extra parking lot at the fairgrounds. It was just hard dirt.
Hmm.
They
ate everything.
They ate everything, all the way down to the nothing. I have pictures of the little airport up there, and they spray all the crops up there on the project, and you should see the front of it, just yellow. I think it would be kind of terrifying, actually, to fly. You've got to hit a bug limit, and then pretty soon there's no air getting in. But yeah, it was terrible. 3 years we fought for them on that. They just ate everything, everything. And you know what's weird? On the grains, instead of eating the grain part, you would think that was what they would eat. They eat the where the stem bends over and the grain is beyond that. They eat the soft bend of the stalk, and so all the all the grains on the ground. They didn't actually eat the grain, which was, like, I don't know, more painful than losing your crop, was that it was actually right there.
But you can't harvest it.
No.
When it's, yeah.
And it was screwing up the balers and everything because the stalks like that, you couldn't process them. And it just, I don't know. I learned a lot about grasshoppers. But it, that was all caused by people. That was all a regulatory, another regulatory boondoggle that walked us into, you know, no crop.
You hear these forever chemicals. A lot of these greenies got everybody scared.
Oh yeah.
On PFAS, and they're basically a fluorine carbon bond, and there are literally 15,000 different combinations of these PFASs, right? And guess what's in your Teflon pan? That's made out of PFAS. It's not hazardous. It doesn't affect your health. It doesn't it's not acid soluble. So, but the environmentalists would like you to believe that all PFASs are bad. So don't fall into that trap, everyone. Just know that there are a few that probably aren't good for you, but for the most part, they're okay.
And so weren't they trying to do something with Teflon pans?
Yeah, they tried to ban them last year, and I got up and spoke and told them they weren't hazardous.
How'd that work out?
It didn't. The Dems all voted for it, and then the governor vetoed it.
Because it was fake.
Yep, nobody listened to me.
Wow. Yeah, you're in a unique and terrifying environment there.
Honestly, you guys, it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing. We have... I actually wonder about the functionality of this state at the level of competence. I'll tell you, there are smart people on both sides of the aisle, but the system is completely broken, and it is really, really bad. I'm really worried for this state unless we get some Republicans in there.
Yeah, because at this point, you don't have people making good decisions.
Nope.
No, and there is a point of no return. I truly believe that. I mean, you look at our refineries. I mean, once you close them down,
point of
no return. And it's the same thing with our state. I think if you lose enough people and enough business and enough technology, it's not coming back. It's never going to be what it was before. And I don't know if we've hit that point yet, but we will if we keep going in the direction we're going.
Yeah, I was talking to a guy the other day, and his friends are, longtime friends that are in the movie industry, and they said, the one guy told him, I was in Italy, I took my whole movie thing for a commercial, took all my guys to Italy, we stayed at a 5-star hotel, we were there for 2 weeks, we filmed this commercial, and it was half as much as it would have been if I filmed it in Burbank.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
I mean, how crazy is that? So at some point, we have made a lot of this untenable, and for what? Roads have potholes, and stuff costs too much, and housing is unaffordable, and all that. So what kind of environment are we really focused on?
Yeah, we're headed south, so we better change fast. But you're right, Bill. Point of no return. In fact, Mike Ariza said it best in that paper that he wrote. And before we get off here, I just want to commend my two partners, Professor Misch and Mike Ariza, are great advocates and have done an incredible job. And I want to commend you two, Bill and Aaron, for getting this out there and making the public aware of what's really going on.
Well, it's going to take all of us because there is no, you know, we live in an age where there is so much information I think we've already kind of determined that a lot of it isn't true. So there's that. So we have a lot of that, but there's just so much bombarding people all the time. And a lot of it is bad news. And it becomes one of those things where it's like, oh, can't look at one more bad thing. But, you know, this one is kind of going to sweep through your world like a scythe.
Yeah.
The fuel deal, whether it's, you know, gas for your car, diesel, propane, butane, you know, it's business, it's groceries on the shelf, it's all of those things. You can't get out of that.
Nope. And I always run into people that know there's a problem, know that they're paying high prices, but they don't understand why. They've got the wrong information, and when they try to tell me what the problem is, they're totally wrong. I was telling a guy about this gas thing the other day, and he started off with, oh, this Iraq thing is just killing us at the pump right now. And I said, you know what? That has nothing to do with it. That's nothing to do with it. And I tried to, you know, explain a lot of it to him, and his jaw was just dropping. Where do you get this information? I showed him where to get the information. I said, get educated and tell people it's not the war. It's California. It's more of California's bad politics that's doing this.
But we've done this before, and Alex just shot me a picture about DDT. You know, we had Rachel Carson with Silent Spring, who just completely, you know, got everybody wound around the axle with DDT. And how many people have died of malaria because we banned DDT?
Yeah, exactly.
You know? So it isn't a new phenomenon. The bad part is, if it isn't new, we should stop doing it, right? If it's bad, typically that's the idea. You know, stick your finger in the light socket, and something bad happens, you should probably quit doing it. Even little kids figure that out.
We'll yeah. Just do it a little bit.
Just a little. Like, let's just try it one more time. It'll probably be different this time, right? Yeah, we weren't allowed to say that in the office, though. The, you know, doing things again gets you a different result. I can't even quote it because we were banned from saying it. It was on the banned list thing along with sustainable and tranche and some other stuff.
Yeah, there is a great quote. The devil isn't stupid, but he is insane.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Stan, we got to hand it to you. Now, you're going to serve until when in the State Assembly? How long do we have you hostage?
The end of this year.
Ow.
Then I'm coming back. And
then you're...
Got a couple more companies I'm starting in deep science, and I'm excited. I'm excited to get out of there because it's been an incredible experience, but it's not productive, and I cannot stand being... not productive.
Sure. That drives me crazy, too, when you're doing things that you know aren't really the best way to do it, but that's just how it's done. You know, it's like...
Terrible answer.
It just drives me
yeah,
crazy.
Yeah, always a terrible answer. That's the way we've always done it.
It's the way we've done it.
Boo, we should quit doing that.
Well, that it's just unbelievable, the lack of productivity there. And so, like I say, there's some great people. They're just caught in this... I don't know, this atmosphere where, well, it's the best job I ever had, so we'll just keep it going.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm making good money, and, you know, I work with great people, but what are you producing, and what are you getting done?
But the really hard part as a legislator is, you know, your staff spends all day telling people, I don't know. Like, how are we going to fix it? I don't know. Why are they doing it? I don't know. I mean, you wind up sounding like a teenager.
Part of the problem is that they ought to be... We've got 1,800 bills up this year. We should have a minus 1,800 bills.
Yeah, right.
Every year for the next 10 years, we should be rid of bills, and we should go to a part-time legislature and save the state of California hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah,
but they're not going to change it because because they love their job.
Yeah, well, everybody thinks it's so great.
I've always thought it was weird to promote the idea that, oh, I helped create this new law.
Yeah,
so, no.
Yeah.
Terrible idea.
Yeah.
Well, Stan Ellis, you are the smartest man in the world today, and we are happy to know you, and happy that you weren't Silent Stan today. Very, very informative discussion, and thanks very much for the time.
Very good discussion.
We look forward to talking to you again.
I'm honored, you guys, and I'd like to thank my partners. Appreciate you.
All right.
You can find all the stuff about Stan and the other two guys that are working on this nonstop at gascrisis.org. We'll be back next week at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay. We got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down. We can't hold back. Though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.